G'day, it's nice to have you join us on this RN podcast. After you've enjoyed this one, you might like to visit us on Books and Arts, your daily coverage of, well, books and arts. You can download us from the RN website.
On RN, you're listening to The Rhythm Divine, where spirituality meets music. With Jeff Wood.
I am the boring, merry stranger wandering through this world of woe. Yet there's no sickness or Lord danger in that bright land to which I go.
One of the first times I went south, Jasper, Alabama, outside of Birmingham, Alabama, tiny little church, the memorial singing of some people that I'd met, and I was trying to keep a low profile, and I was in the second row, and somebody from the first row then said, I'm sitting back there with that Yankee. But first break, this woman, elderly woman, came up to me all enthused, and she said, wow, you have a beautiful voice. I'm 92 years old, and you have a beautiful voice. And I'm not used to people saying my voice is beautiful. And so I, you know, politely thanked her. But then she went on and said, I can hear you all the way across the church. You have a beautiful voice. And the notion of the aesthetic, that hearing you across the church is what makes for beautiful, as opposed to lovely bel canto tones and rounded palate and soft blending voice, which is another sort of beauty, but I don't think I could achieve that if I worked every day of my life. So that notion of a different aesthetic, it suited me temperamentally, and I think it suited me in terms of this voice I have that I did nothing to create. So what can you say?
I can't decipher why it took such a hold on me initially when I heard the music, but I had this instant vision of me singing this with my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren. You know, it was something that's timeless that people have been singing for hundreds of years. It requires nothing more than a book and some light, you know. It's not high-tech, it's low-tech. Maybe it's something to do with the harmonies and the intervals. They're quite eerie and jarring at times. I definitely think there's something that's reflective of life. Those subsections of emotion in life that we can't explain very well. So it's very emotive music. There's a huge community element involved in it. I have a family of friends now around the world that I didn't know existed 2 years ago. There's fellowship, there's community, there's so many things. But I think essentially it's just that quality of those old, old songs.
For more than 200 years, an American style of folk hymn singing has been kept alive in the deep south of the United States. Known as sacred harp singing, it's a mixture of folk tunes, revivalist hymns, odes and anthems sung out loud in a raw four-part harmony. The music takes its name from The Sacred Harp, a songbook of more than 500 hymns published in 1844 and updated continuously ever since. It's a form of shape note singing, a simplified form of music using four shapes, a diamond, triangle, oval and square, to notate the scale. Although a deeply spiritual experience based on the Protestant tradition, the singing isn't affiliated with any particular church or denomination, which might account for its remarkable resurgence in the past few years, spreading from its American homeland to England and now Australia, where the first national convention, an all-day singing, was held late last year in Sydney. G'day, I'm Jeff Wood. And on this special Good Friday edition of The Rhythm Divine here on RN, we'll meet some of the people who attended that all-day singing. Men and women from around the world, drawn together by the power of the voice in search of spirit.
Will become a
Sacred Harp singing is a form of community choral singing. We're singing in four parts, so we sit around an open square shape, all facing in towards each other, and we're singing from a book called The Sacred Harp. That's where the name comes from, and it refers not to a musical instrument, but to the human voice. That is the sacred harp. So we're singing songs that are old hymns set to a particular style of music and a certain style of arrangement that developed in the United States in the 1770s. But we're getting together and singing as a community just for the participation and the fun of it. That's what sacred harp singing is to me.
A lot of the words for the hymns that are in the sacred harp come from the traditional hymn writers like Isaac Watts and Wesley, and the words were taken by the American hymn writers and given new tunes. Some of the tunes that we sing are still sung in churches, including churches in Australia today, so they're in the New Australian Hymn Book. But there are other songs which just use phrases and words that people wrote at the time, which are church words. And the words are a little bit different to what we would normally sing in churches today. A lot of the songs are very focused on death and dying and going to heaven, which not many mainstream churches talk about now. And that's because people didn't live as long then, and they dealt with death within their families, and they dealt with death in a very different way to how we do now. So it was important to sing about those things then. And we've kind of lost that. So it's nice. I think there's something good about singing about death and removing the stigma of not talking about death about this music as well. And I know that for some of the singers who sing it, that's one of the things they really like about sacred harp, is it doesn't shy away from things that we don't normally talk about.
Hi, I'm Sean Whelan, and I've been singing sacred harp music since the time when Natalie and I lived in the United States in around about 1999-2000. Fell in love with the very raw, rich sound of it, and came back to Australia and found I just couldn't live without it.
My name's Natalie Sims, and I've always sung since I was a kid with my family and through church. And when we came across sacred harp singing, it was unlike any other singing that I'd done, in that it seemed to give me more energy than it took, which is why I love it so much and why I still do it.
So Natalie and I are the founders of the Melbourne Sacred Harp Singers. We've been singing in Melbourne for about 11 years now. We started the group just to sing monthly with friends, which is what sacred harp singing is all about, getting together with people, enjoying each other's company and the sound of the music. We never perform, it's not a performance choir, but we started the group so that we could have the same kind of community singing experience in Australia that we'd had in the States.
And we started the group because there wasn't anyone else in Australia doing it at the time. We searched around on the internet and called everybody we knew who might have an idea where someone was doing it, and nobody was. So we sort of had to start the group ourselves, even though we really didn't know what we were doing. But, you know, 11 years later, 12 years later, we're doing okay. We've learned how to do it now.
And here we are at the first ever all-day singing in Australia. So part of the tradition of sacred harp singing is that the small groups in various towns across the United States would get together on a state basis or a regional basis or a national basis for a full day of singing or even a full weekend of singing. So we'll be singing all day today here in Sydney, and then a few of us will kick on tomorrow for some more singing.
Hello, my name is Emer Craddock, a sacred harp singer from the west coast of Ireland, a place called Galway. I found this music 2 years ago in Cork in the south of Ireland and fell instantly in love with it. I found it at a community hall in the city in Cork. I was looking for somewhere to sing, but not essentially a choir type sing. I wanted a community sing, and I found this, knew nothing about the tradition, walked into the room. People were already singing. I was knocked over by this huge, huge sound, this wall of sound that I was instantly knocked over and bowled over by, and I fell instantly and irrevocably in love with it. I didn't understand it. It didn't make sense. I didn't know what people were saying when they were singing the shapes. The sounds were sometimes discordant, but it was beautiful. It was raw and it was beautiful, and I loved it from the word go. So I sang it for the last year and a half, year in Ireland, and then I moved to Sydney in December 2011, not knowing if there was any sacred harp in Sydney. Was put in contact with some Melbourne singers who put me in contact with a man called James Daly, who the month I arrived started to sing in Sydney. So I joined him, and we run a monthly sing in Surrey Hills, which is 9 months old at this stage. And today is our very first, Australia's very first all-day sing.
Hi, my name's James Daly, and I'm the founder of the Surrey Hills Shape Note Singers, a sacred harp group in Sydney. The style of singing is shape note singing, and the book that the music comes from is called The Sacred Harp. So you'll often find groups that are called The Sacred Harp Singers or The Shape Note Singers. They're just, one denotes the style and one is the book where the music comes from.
It's very different from a normal choir in that we are participants as opposed to performers. So it's more of a community event and meeting than it is a performance. We sit on four sides of a hollow square and we project our sound inwards at whoever is leading at that point in time. We are creating an enclosed space of sound as opposed to projecting out at an audience. It's egalitarian in that there are no leaders. Anyone can pick a song, anyone can jump up in the middle and lead that song. There's no hierarchy. There's no fuss or heavy emphasis on quality of voice or musical experience or training. All you would need to sing this music is a desire to sing and a love of singing. You may think you have no voice at all, which would exclude you from a normal choir. And we have only got one rule, and that's to sing loudly.
The Sacred Harp is a compilation of shape note songs, and it gets updated fairly regularly. So there's songs in it that have been written more recently, and there are other shape note books that are also published, and that people who sing Sacred Harp will often sing those songs as well, because it's the same style, they just happen not to be in the Sacred Harp book. So certainly the group in Sydney call themselves Shape Note Singers rather than Sacred Harp, so that you get an understanding of the broadness of the tradition. It's not just about one book, it's about lots of songs.
Shapes to make it easier. So you can see a scale instead of being do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do is fa, sol, la, mi, fa. So sing it together with me if you can't read this. To remember, so before we sing the scale, I'll tell you how to remember what the shapes are. So the fa, I usually think of it as being like a flag. And so, and Aimer very helpfully made the shape note bunting, so that gave us some triangular flags. So the fa is a triangle, like a flag. The la is like an L, so it's a square. Just think of two L's on top of each other. The sol is like an O, because it's the only one that's got an O in it. So sol for the round. And then mi, I just think of it as being really small, as mi, but other people say diamonds are for me, so it's a diamond shape. And there's lots of other ways, but that's what works for me. So let's just try singing a scale. Ready?
Fa, sol, la, fa, sol, la, mi, fa.
Shape notes are a way of writing musical notation. So it looks the same as normal music, except instead of all the notes being round, they're four different shapes, which are circles, triangles, squares, and little diamonds. And those shapes tell you where you are in the scale. It's kind of, if you think about the sound of music, where you'd be singing do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. With shape note, it's very similar, but there's not seven different shapes because that's hard to print. There's four different shapes, so it's fa, sol, la, mi, fa. And that's the names of the shapes and the way you can find your way around the stave, even if you haven't read music before. Initially, it was designed as a way of teaching music to people who had forgotten how to read music. So the history of shape note music is that travelling preachers and travelling songwriters would go from small village to small village, usually within a fairly close area, and teach them how to sing. Some of them would also preach, but some of them would just teach people how to sing, and then they would sell their books of music notation. And there's similar traditions in the UK as well, but the shape note tradition is one that arose particularly in the US, so it's an American tradition.
The other thing that you'll notice is when Emma was leading the song, she was moving her hands up and down, but she wasn't the only one doing it. So the leader will lead the song by going one, two, one, two, one. So the one is the first beat of the bar.
There's something about the sacred harp sound which is particularly rousing to me. It's like the full-bodied sort of harmonies, that the particular harmonies that they sing in this music is a very immediate feeling, is when you launch into a song or you hear someone, sacred harp groups launch into music. I remember the first time I'd sung it, I was just like really taken back, and it just has this kind of strange power to it that I don't get from singing in other choirs that I've been involved in. I think it's just the completely unrehearsed and unpolished nature of it that is just really vibrant and vigorous, and I really like that. It's very appealing.
On RN, you're with a special Good Friday edition of The Rhythm Divine at Australia's first all-day singing, exploring the American folk hymn tradition known as sacred harp singing. We just heard from the founder of the Surrey Hills Shape Note Singers in Sydney, James Daly. The very first Australian group, however, was the Melbourne Sacred Harp Singers, formed in 2001 by Natalie Sims and Sean Whelan.
The harmonies of sacred harp music are quite distinctive, and that's what attracts most of us to be singing it. I'm not a top-rate musicologist, but some of the things that characterise these harmonies, for those who know about these things, are that there's a lot of open fifths, there are a lot of fourths, and there are a lot of open sort of 1-5-8 chords. So big, open, gutsy sounds. There are also a number of seconds, particularly as melodies cross each other or come close to each other. There are various ways in which sacred harp music breaks the so-called rules of harmony that were developed in the classical period. And in fact, sacred harp music was pushed out of the centres of main centres of population in the northeastern United States by the arrival of sort of so-called proper church music, proper classical music, which is what most of us today would think of as proper church music. But actually this earlier, and not indigenous I guess, but early American form of singing was preserved in very small, isolated rural communities who loved the raw, gutsy sound of it. And a century or so later, the rest of us have rediscovered that. And that those raw, gutsy harmonies is what most people come for.
It's not just the harmonies that are different to other choral singing. It's also the style of singing is quite different. So it is folk singing and it's folk hymn singing. It's not a trained style of singing. In a lot of ways, I think the way the voice is used in sacred harp is almost a cross between African-American gospel singing and Eastern European style of singing. It's a very open-throated, raw sound. So, I mean, you'll hear that it's quite loud and a bit rough and a bit edgy.
Part of the singing tradition is that we're singing in a square all facing each other, and the leader of any given song, who's just a person who's volunteered to lead from the group, will stand in the centre of the square and will call which song they want to sing, and everyone will find it in their books, and then we'll set ourselves a key that's a key that is comfortable for everyone to sing in the different parts, and then the leader will just kind of very simply beat time with their arm. One of the songs I led today was Evening Shade. And it follows on very well what Natalie was saying about the darker side. You know, the day is past and gone, the evening shades appear, so may we all remember well the night of death is near. It's the first verse. Second verse, we lay... what is the second verse?
We lay our garments down upon our beds to rest.
So death will soon disrobe us all of what we here possess. And it's that reminder of mortality. There isn't a joyful, happy, triumphalist ending in that song. It's just death will disrobe us all of what we here possess. And that's one of the things that I like, is the gritty reminder of mortality, which we mostly shy away from in 21st century Australia.
So everyone who wanted to lead has led. Is there anyone else who wanted to that hasn't? Put their name on the list and we'll just start round the circle again. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So Steve from Minnesota, to be followed by Morag.
Okay, so now I'm learning. We should probably go through things slow with the shapes and make sure we have them. So my apologies for earlier. But I'd like to do 350.
Hello, I'm Stephen Levine. I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota in the United States, and I have flown out to Australia to sing at the first Australian all-day shape note convention. This is a trip of a lifetime. I love being here in Australia. I love the excuse to come out and sing this music that I've been singing for 30 years or so, meet new people who sing it, sing with some people I've met before, and just help make the around-the-world connections that this music has made for me.
La fa so la so fa la fa so mi fa.
The first time I went south, I actually went to two different singings. One at a small little country church only about an hour west of Atlanta. So it wasn't even all that far from a big city, but it might as well have been a billion miles away from a big city. In a church, a tiny little church that was no longer even in operation as a church. They just kept the church as a building so they could have this singing once a year that had been going on there for 100 years. In this tight little room with the most live acoustics imaginable, with the Southern singers for whom it had, as I say, it had religious meaning, but that was really just about big voices and loud singing and ways of singing I hadn't heard before. And that was very exciting musically. But the next day, I went to the Antioch Primitive Baptist Church in Ider, Alabama, which is the home church of a family that lives in that area, the Wooten family, who has kept the music alive within their family and through their church for them. And this is their big singing. By the time I went to that singing, I already knew the music. One of the gentlemen there said to me, "You can sing closed book. You just enjoy this," which was true. But I was surrounded by this family who was taking me in and saying, "You sing with us. You feel something in this music that we feel. You're in our club." But they would get up with their family and they would sing the music, and they would cry. These great big burly farmers, although I don't mean to be cut, they're certainly very, very educated, but I mean, people from a different world who I wouldn't expect to be so emotionally free, were emotionally free through the music. And people wanted to talk about the music and the memories the music evoked for them and the family memories it evoked for them. And there were certain songs that aren't in the shape note, in the sacred harp that they were singing from, but that their family sings. And they would pass out Xeroxes and we'd sing these schmaltzy 19th century parlor kind of songs, "Love It Home," but it didn't feel schmaltzy and maudlin. It felt sincere. In the Northeast, where I started singing this, and even in the North, I think we're all a little bit self-conscious about expressing emotion, about admitting our passion for what I just called schmaltzy. And in the case of the Sacred Harp, through religious images and metaphors, which are very intense emotionally. And so to be with people who I think because it was within the safety of their family, their culture, and their tradition, they could be free. A little less cynical, I think, than my home culture. And I did find that refreshing, and in time I found it to be a way of making friends with people I would otherwise never know.
Stephen Levine from Minneapolis in Minnesota, enjoying the warmth and the fellowship at Australia's first all-day singing in Sydney last October. An event facilitated by Emar Craddock and James Daly from the Surrey Hills Shape Note Singers, who we heard in that program, along with Natalie Sims and Sean Whelan, founders of the Melbourne Sacred Harp Singers. And my thanks to all of them for their time and patience. I'm Jeff Wood, and I hope you've enjoyed this Good Friday excursion into the world of sacred harp singing. I'll have more information and audio online at abc.net.au/radionational. Just look for The Rhythm Divine, which you can catch at its regular broadcast time this Sunday morning at 6 o'clock, when I'll be featuring Stephen Levine at length with more stories and songs from the sacred harp tradition. But I'll leave you with the soundtrack that took this music to the world in 2003, from the Civil War movie Cold Mountain. Alabama's Liberty Baptist Church Sacred Harp singers, who have nurtured this music for more than a century. And a hymn written in 1850, number 282, I'm Going Home. And that's the Rhythm Divine.
It's overwhelming. I grew up thinking that the Matthew Passion was basically for musical boffins.
Bach has been so careful to draw you in. Komm, ihr Töchter, helft mir klagen. Come, you daughters, help me.
The St. Matthew Passion, one of the greatest pieces of sacred music in the Western canon and the centrepiece of a recent forum.
I come out of conducting a performance of this almost unable to speak.
Tears and Transcendence. And you can stream this into the music from the RN website.